From the studios of Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Fred Astaire was one of the greatest entertainers of the 20th century. Most people think of Astaire as, first and foremost, a dancer, which, you know, he was, of course, but he was also a musician and a popular vocalist. In fact, Astaire introduced more standards to the American popular songbook than any other singer, including Bing Crosby or Frank Sinatra. My guest, Todd Decker, has written a book that casts Astaire in a different light. It's called Music Makes Me, Fred Astaire and Jazz. Todd Decker, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thank you for having me.
You know, we often think about how Elvis Presley was one of the people who broke down barriers between race music and pop music. And,
right.
And even Bing Crosby has been characterized this way as bringing Louis Armstrong influence into pop music. But we don't really think about Fred Astaire in this same sense. But your book argues that we should.
Right. Partly on the basis of who Astaire chose to work with. He was in Hollywood from, you know, about 1932 on to the end of his career in the late 60s. Astaire was in a remarkable position to choose his collaborators. And one of the things that I found in looking at the archival record was that even early on, even in the early 40s, Astaire was choosing African-American dance band arrangers, for instance, who were working for white dance bands. He would have a black dance band arranger come in and do the arrangement for a musical number in a film. This would be maybe the only number this arranger, like Calvin Jackson is one who comes to mind, the only number Jackson would do on the film would be Astaire's. And I think he did this to bring an authentic jazz sensibility to the music that he danced to. And, early on he does a few numbers with African-American jazz musicians, but when he gets to his television years from 58 on, again and again, he chose fairly well-known black jazz musicians to accompany him on his dances on television and to feature those performers on television. So that's one of sort of the big arcs of his career that I try to bring out, is his connections with African-American jazz musicians.
It's really wonderful, too, that you talk about the television specials, which I happen to remember, but you know, people think of Astaire's movies because we see them all the time, and the television specials are kind of now gone. I mean, you could still search for them, I guess, if you.
Yeah, sometimes they pop up on YouTube or clips of them on YouTube, but I had to go to museum collections to see them. They've never been released commercially.
And you even referenced that he did several episodes of The Hollywood Palace. I didn't know about
right,
that.
Right, which is a great series from the 60s and early 70s that,
yeah.
Brought unlikely entertainers together. So you have Astaire dancing with the Tijuana Brass, or Astaire dancing with Jimmy Smith, the jazz.
Yeah. Well, so we don't really, normally associate Fred Astaire with jazz. How did you see him in connection with jazz?
Well, it came out of listening, because I'm a musicologist, so I was, trying to listen as closely as possible to the music that he was dancing with in these Hollywood films, in all of his films, which run from, 32 to 58. And after listening to it, I said, this is strange. So often this really sounds like Benny Goodman, say. It sounds like he's dancing to a Benny Goodman recording. And my research, a lot of it involved going to studio archives where the pay records or the studio scheduling or the production files were kept. And sure enough, that number that sounded like he was dancing to the music of Benny Goodman was arranged by Skip Martin, say, who was one of Benny Goodman's main arrangers. So the archives is really sort of the evidence of who he worked with is really what, for me, makes the connection with jazz. Also just the notion that, those years, the 30s and 40s particularly, jazz was popular music, and there were black and white dance bands that were at the center of American popular culture. And I think Astaire wanted to be there, too. He wanted to connect with people at that popular music and dance level. So that's, really what I mean by jazz, a time when jazz was sort of at the center of things.
It wasn't quite as, I don't know what the word, genre-fied as it is today, I guess. Because now we think of jazz as one thing and pop music as a completely, totally separate other thing. But even in the 1940s, I guess there was jazz and swing, and then there was, I don't know, Kate Smith, and although she kind of was bluesy at one time, but most of her pop hits were not particularly jazzy or...
Right.
You know, I don't know who were some of the others that weren't particularly jazz-oriented that had big hits in those days, but not all pop music was jazz, but I guess more you're saying that more of it was jazz than...
Well, and I think, too, that the people that Astaire worked with, like for instance, he under the table at RKO, the studio he was working at, on one film, on Shall We Dance, his mm-hmm. A film with Ginger Rogers, they hired the Jimmy Dorsey band to play... the accompaniment for Astaire and Rogers' dance numbers. It was sort of against union rules. Dance bands that there were union rules in L.A. that would protect the jobs of studio musicians who lived there, as opposed to touring musicians who were coming through town. And they brought in the Jimmy Dorsey band, who was in town playing at a local ballroom and on the radio, to record the music that Astaire and Rogers would dance to, and you know, the desire to get the sort of authentic sound of a dance band is often there in Astaire's work. It's harder to find, because of the way these studio numbers were put together, it's harder to find, say, an instance where a great jazz soloist was brought in to improvise in an Astaire film. That you're not going to find that simply because of the way these numbers were made. But the dance beat and the sound of a hot jazz band as the underlying rhythm he was dancing to, you know, I find him going for that again and again across his career. It's what sort of motivates his movement.
We're talking with Todd Decker, and his book is called Music Makes Me, Fred Astaire and Jazz. And it's interesting. Is this a 350-page book about Fred Astaire, but you're not concerned with, we don't know anything about Fred Astaire. His personal life in this book, you don't mention anything about him. In fact, you're not even very concerned with his movies outside of his musical numbers. It's simply a study of his music. Yeah?
Right. Well, I think, you know, Astaire made movies, obviously, because that's what Hollywood sold. And he was a movie star. But the part that I guess I'm interested in him mostly as a creative figure. He did his own choreography, on his own, but then in collaboration with others, yes. But he had there's only very few routines of Astaire's that where you can't say, you know, that's sort of a move that he's completely approved of. That, you know, that's his move. so his dance routines were the parts of the films that he had complete control over, and the archives show this again and again. The way he rehearsed his films, the order in which they shot scenes. Even who was behind the camera, and you know, there's a single sheet for every day's shooting, the assistant director's report, and in at least one case, Astaire is essentially listed as the director on the set, the person in charge on the set. So you know, those are the moments in the film, the dance numbers, that he cared the most about, that reflect his creative impulses the most. Now, he's not going to be a movie star without playing those scenes in between, without playing characters. But I didn't find a lot of evidence, say, unlike someone like Gene Kelly, that Astaire was particularly interested in the broad scope of the film or in having a director credit at the end, in being the director of record. He wanted to wow the audience with a dance number, and you know, he kept them short. They don't usually go beyond 4 or 5 minutes. 5 minutes is actually pretty long for him, and they're, you know, they feature him by himself or with a partner, you know, dancing in a way that sort of takes you out of the film. And on all of his numbers, you can watch them in isolation from the film, and they're completely whole. I mean, you don't miss anything by not knowing the story on either side. So that's really what I'm focusing on mostly is his creative work, what he brought to American culture, music, film, dance, through his work.
In me you see a sinner, dancing is my crime. It seems a sin, I've got to give in. Syncopated time. It makes me lose my dignity. It makes me lose my poise. And some folks call it music, but others call it noise. I like music, old or new, but music makes me do the things I never should do. I like music, sweet or blue, but music makes me do the things I never should do. My self-control was something to brag about, now it's a gag about town. The things I do are never forgiven for, just when I'm living them down. I hear music, then I'm through, for music makes me do the things I never should do.
Mentioned Gene Kelly, and you spend some time in the book kind of comparing Fred Astaire to others, even though
right.
he's incomparable. In fact, you actually demonstrate that he truly is incomparable.
Well, and I think he's incomparable partly because of, you know, he's a great American artist who did what great American artists do, which is sort of reinvent themselves in a way that makes them unique. He's one of these great individuals that did that. Martin Williams compares him to Sarah Vaughan as someone who, you know, could sing opera, but why would she want to? She was something else. She was a genuine American artist in that way. But he also had a lot of advantages. You know, he shows up in Hollywood at exactly the moment when they need movie stars who can talk and sing and dance, turned out, you know, with the coming of synchronized sound. And the movie musical dies, essentially, as he understood it, died in the late 50s, and Astaire at that point transitions very smoothly into variety television. You compare him to someone like Gene Kelly, whose career is a little more of, I don't know, it's a little hotter in the sense that it explodes, but it doesn't last, it doesn't have the length that Astaire has. So, you know, Astaire had these great advantages, and one of them, obviously, is that he was white. He's a tap dancer, which was an African American dance form primarily, and you know, no African American dancer who showed up in Hollywood in the 30s was going to have the career Astaire could have, because there wasn't a category of a black leading man. Astaire is able to, you know, redefine the Hollywood white leading man around himself, and so that's also one of the you know, advantages that he enjoyed. So, you know, he comes along at just the right moment and certainly milks it for all it's worth across four good decades.
Of course, he also had some disadvantages. I mean, he was short.
Right.
He was not, I mean, I think he's attractive, but I think he's sort of known as not being particularly attractive. I mean, he's not as attractive, I guess, as Gene Kelly was.
Right, yeah. And you know, Gene Kelly reflects a different kind of new Hollywood star that comes along who has to be a little more generically good-looking, if you will. So, yeah, Astaire certainly overcomes some of those disadvantages.
And I think his singing, I think Gene Kelly was also a good singer, but I don't think Gene Kelly ever had any hit records or made any records at all.
No, you know, and that's the other thing. Astaire has this whole career of recording, in the 30s, recording separate pop music versions of the songs in his films, and then continuing to sing those songs on and on in the 50s and 60s when he was on television. He would end his specials with a medley of the great songs that were written for him, essentially. And, you know, he can sing 15 songs, all Gershwin, Berlin, and Porter, and, immediately evoke this whole kind of popular jazz singing that was part of his persona as well. So, yes, singing is a big part of his art. And certainly songwriters appreciated him tremendously.
Well, I guess so, since they wrote so many great songs for him. And it's interesting because not only are there the songs that I think everybody associates with Astaire, like Cheek to Cheek and Top Hat, and They Can't Take That Away From Me. But then there's also, you know, One for My Baby and One More for the Road and Something's Gotta Give. And some really, you know, songs that, well, that's a Fred Astaire song?
Right. And one of the fascinating things for me was discovering his connection with Johnny Mercer. That, you know, Johnny Mercer, who's sort of a second generation great songwriter, who's just a little bit younger than Berlin and Porter and those guys. Astaire cultivated relationships with these songwriters, I think recognizing that he needed that part of his appeal, even, you know, into the mid-50s with Something's Gotta Give, that part of his appeal for audiences was, you know, it's an Astaire film, there'll be a new song in it, a new popular song that will then become the fabric of people's lives that they can sing at home or dance to or, hum along with. So he recognized that musical connection to the song and to new songs was a part of his part of keeping his place in people's hearts or in their keeping their interest, you know, maintaining his stardom.
I think one of the things that connects Fred Astaire with jazz were these great jazz records that he made in the 1950s. Talk a little bit about those.
Yeah, and those are a set of four records that he made with Norman Granz, who was the jazz impresario and civil rights activist who created the Jazz Philharmonic. And Granz was always looking for a chance to bring bring jazz of a particular popular kind, but jazz and great jazz artists, as he defined it, to the biggest audience possible. And it's fascinating that one of Granz's first big ideas to do this was to team Astaire up with great and quite young jazz players like pianist Oscar Peterson, and to put them in a studio together with a list of great songs that had been written for Astaire. So it's a history project in the sense that Granz is saying, you know, look at all these songs that were written for Fred Astaire in the past, in the 30s and 40s, but listen to them in this new jazz idiom that brings Astaire, a white movie star, together with an interracial group of jazz musicians. And when Downbeat, the jazz magazine, reviewed this set, they sort of explicitly separated and they said, you know, for the jazz lover, these discs have this. And for the Astaire lover, these discs have this. So as if Granz is trying to keep jazz in the popular imagination and using Astaire to do it. So yeah, that project. And the records have never gone out of print. They're a central part of the Norman Granz discography of records that he produced.
What's your favorite track on those? If you want to say, everybody should listen to this one.
Not My Girl.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah, it's called Not My Girl, which was a song that Astaire wrote. He always said that the one thing he wished he could have done was to be a popular songwriter, to write the songs himself. But Astaire, you know, that takes some chutzpah to, you know, play, sit down at the piano and play some stride piano and then sort of hand it off to Oscar Peterson. So, you know, I think as Astaire worked with these jazz musicians, he got more comfortable and they start to do some more adventurous things like the dancing and Astaire playing piano.
Thank you.
those tender girls, those ready to surrender girls. I've got one of a tougher kind, rougher kind, the make men suffer kind. Who's sweet to me, not my girl? Who's kind to me, not my girl? You want to know what my girl can be? Listen to me. The sight of her wakes men up. A day with her shakes men up. She practically breaks men up. She's not an Annabelle Lee. Without her, I could not exist. The way that she loves is frightening. And on the day that she and I first kissed, I thought I was struck by lightning. Who's heavenly, not my girl? Who wants to be not my girl? If only you'd got my girl, you know what's the matter with me. My girl, who's kind to me, not my girl. Do you want to know what my girl can be? Listen to me. The moment she chooses you, your family loses you. Her kissing just bruises you. You learn what loving can be. Some girls knit socks, but she's not quite the sort to be neat and tidy. And the socks she gave me Wednesday night just put me to sleep till Friday. Who's heavenly, not my girl? Who wants to be not my girl? If only you've got my girl, you know what's the matter with me.
We're talking with Todd Decker, and his book is called Music Makes Me, Fred Astaire and Jazz. Todd Decker, let's talk about some of the sequences of the films that are your favorites. You go through exhaustively comparing, and you don't go in a chronological way. I think you have sort of a thematic way of looking
right.
at all the numbers. But if we were going to say, you know, look up some of our favorites, what do you think we should watch for?
In the film Let's Dance, which is a pretty obscure...
Why isn't that one out there on DVD, I wonder?
You know, I'm sure that it's just some sort of contract, some sort of ownership thing that Paramount films from a particular year aren't re-released.
Betty
but you can find this on YouTube. This is on YouTube as the ad-lib dance or the piano dance from Let's Dance. And this is a great routine where Astaire basically begins it by saying he doesn't want to rehearse. He's a nightclub performer in a nightclub. And it's a rehearsal situation. And he says, I don't want to rehearse, which is a big joke because Astaire, of course, rehearsed like crazy. He was always known as a control freak and someone who wanted to rehearse a lot. And so he goes out and does this routine that is supposedly just sort of off the cuff. But in the course of the routine, he plays piano. He plays stride piano and a little bit of boogie-woogie piano, too. He attacks these two pianos, an upright, climbs all over it, and a grand piano. He attacks them physically and, in a sense, acts crazy in a way that I don't think he does in any other film. He sort of lets himself go. So that's a rather unknown Astaire routine that is worth looking up. And the one from Mr. and Mrs. Hoofer at Home from the film Three Little Words with Vera Ellen, which is an interesting example of an Astaire routine that's not done to a song. It's an original sequence of musical ideas composed by André Previn, who Astaire worked with. And, you know, Astaire does surprising things in this. There's a long stretch of boogie-woogie. There's a little bit of waltz. The music is going back and forth from a female music to a more male jazzy sound. And he even quotes music that had been written in a dance number, you know, 20 years earlier that had been in a dance number. So that's a particularly surprising routine in the sense of how it's put together musically. And it makes a lot of references to different musical styles. I mean, Astaire understood that his audience would recognize when it was a rumba and when it was boogie-woogie and the different kinds of movement that these different kinds of music would signal to them, that his audience was literate in that. So the third one is called Bounce in the Blues, which is with Ginger Rogers in their late 40s teaming at MGM.
Their reunion picture.
Right, the Barclays of Broadway. And this was a really interesting number because he brought in to accompany it swing band musicians who had found jobs in the studio. These were you know, experienced, long time jazz musicians from the golden age of the dance band, who, when the dance bands began to fold, moved to LA and found jobs at MGM. And Astaire essentially cherry picked them, coming out with the drummer Frankie Carlson. Cherry picked them out of the MGM orchestra and created this jazz tap number that is a sustained sort of rhythmic exploration of what I hear to be bebop ideas. I connect it to some bebop recordings that were circulating in Los Angeles that, you know, Astaire might have known right at the time. So, you know, all three of these numbers are good examples of sort of Astaire coming to terms with music changing around him. But that number with Rogers in particular is the Bounce in the Blues, which is also on easy to find on YouTube, is a great example of how with Astaire it's the sound that matters, that he's building these dances from the sounds like a drummer would, that's at the core of what music means to him, or what syncopated music means to him.
Music makes me do the things I never should do.
Right, yes. Which he doesn't sing in the film, but which, yeah, I think, you know, describes his approach to things pretty well.
In your book, you a couple of times reference Astaire's autobiography, but a version that we haven't read.
Right.
Where'd you find that, and what's in there that we haven't seen before?
It's a handwritten draft that he sat down to write, and he actually did write his autobiography.
Yes, Steps in Time.
Didn't have a ghostwriter. He wrote it in longhand. And these are early chapters, which I suspect when, you know, the editor that he worked with looked at these maybe, or maybe the editor never saw them. But at some point they realized, you know, these are not necessarily what the audience, what the readers are interested in. You know, he talked about the cameraman he'd worked with. He talked specifically about the labor involved in what he had to do, the creating of the dance, the adding in of the tap sounds, you know, in post-production after the dance number had been filmed, adding in the tap sounds afterwards, the meticulousness of his craft. I mean, this is a guy who didn't have a big Hollywood nightlife, social life. He was very much a homebody, and had a private social life. But, you know, he saw the making of movies, musical numbers, as a craft, and he wanted them to be as perfect as possible. And his early draft, he talks about this in quite naked and direct terms. I think more direct than make it into the published autobiography.
Well,
that was exciting to read, and also to see it in his handwriting.
In his own handwriting.
You know, him laboring over explaining himself creatively.
Well, the book is called Music Makes Me, Fred Astaire and Jazz. The author is Todd Decker. Todd Decker, thank you so much for spending some time with us on From the Bookshelf.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, that's it for this episode of From the Bookshelf. I hope you had a good time and that you'll come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our website, www.fromthebookshelf.com. Find us on Facebook and subscribe to our podcast at iTunes. I want to thank my guest, Todd Decker, his book, Music Makes Me, Fred Astaire and Jazz. Production assistance on From the Bookshelf is provided by Francis Venegas. Thanks, Francis. For From the Bookshelf, I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.